Geico presents Our Town, Season 3, a 30-minute podcast produced by Best Bark Communications, a small but fierce client-centered marketing company powered by decades of experience and well-established business networks. Geico, 15 minutes can save you 15% or more on car insurance. Now, here's your host, Andy Ockershausen.
This is Andy Ockershausen, and I'm just so grateful today to have an opportunity to talk to a man who is, I don't want to say he's an icon because he's too active. He is a very important part of Our Town. He helped build it. Arthur Cotton Moore was a graduate of Princeton University. He grew up in the city. In fact, he's sixth generation. He's known as all the buildings he's put together, all the things he's done. He has been an architect for over six decades, has an owner of the Shadley & Smith firm. He has excelled in such phenomenal projects as his book in which he wrote. Here's a man with so many accomplishments. You know, it's hard to believe, but one person can do this much, but he's done it. And he's such an important part of Our Town. What he has done is unbelievable. And Arthur, this is your capital and our nation's capital, but it's Our Town. Welcome to Our Town, Arthur Cotton Moore.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, we know you so well and have watched you. I say we, that's a collective we. What you have done for Our Town is unbelievable, and some of your projects. But the basic part I remember about you, you always look, when I wanted somebody to be an architect, I'd call Central Casting, and if I did, they'd send Arthur Cotton Moore. He looks like an architect. Am I right? He walks, he talks like it.
I didn't bring my T-square.
when I grew up first in broadcasting in the community, with Bud Doggett, who you know very well and remember,
right.
Not with us anymore, but he was very instrumental in getting me involved with the Board of Trade, with a man named Leon Chatelain.
Yes.
Do you remember that name?
Yes, I do.
And I didn't know he was an architect, but he always looked like $1 million, too. He had his own business after a while.
Right? He didn't. He did, yes.
I know he passed away, but he was a very, very important part of Our Town.
Right.
And helped. But nobody's done what you've done, Arthur. From St. Albans, you mastered in fine arts and architecture at Princeton.
Yes.
A lot of my people, and I say my people, the Evening Star owned this company, WMAL.
Right.
And the Star family, almost all of them were Princeton graduates that grew up, you know. The
right.
Kaufmans and the Noyes and so forth.
I didn't know that.
A big part of Our Town.
Mm-hmm.
The newspaper people.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I remember. The Evening Star was the paper for a long time. And then the Times Herald was a scandal sheet. And then
and then
morphed into the Post, yes.
It's so wonderful that you remember that the demise of the Star was caused mostly by television because the afternoon delivery became impossible.
Right.
And Star owned a very valuable TV station in Channel 7, so they were hoisted a little bit in their own petard of business.
Right.
The TV was good, but the newspaper went under. Which is kind of sad, Arthur.
It was sad. It was sad. I like that. Actually, I still have a cartoon by Jim Berryman.
I remember him vividly.
Jim Berryman, and he was holding my grandfather, a very ancient relative, and was holding a baby, and that was my mother.
Is that right?
And it was on in the Evening Star.
He was a world-class cartoonist, but political cartoonist.
Political
correct?
Cartoonist.
He
He's one of the first
Jim
ones,
Berman.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy named Gib Crockett, too. I know these Star people. I knew that they were all Princeton. The ones I knew went to Princeton anyway. But they're probably older. And then the Star went out of business. That building is still down there in Southwest. You didn't have anything to do with that, did you?
No. No, I'm clean.
But the Janice and I are constantly amazed, Arthur. We ride through the city at least once or twice a week on the Southeast Freeway and see what's happened at the wharf, what's happened along by the ballpark.
Yes.
Now, I know the wharf was one of your ideas way back to do something special.
Well, to do something about it, we did do a book, which is not this book here, but a book on waterfronts all over the country. And we looked at 96 waterfronts, and we picked six. And basically, one of them was the Washington Channel waterfront, which I had worked on a little bit, and was one of the ones we felt that was not successful. And so the wharf is an improvement, a very big improvement. But they mostly what we did when I worked on the waterfront, the Washington Channel waterfront, was that there was a plan for a kind of Whitehurst Freeway along there. And we fought that. We fought that, and we finally got rid of it. So I think that was the biggest achievement we made, really, down there.
But there's still a elevated... Wasn't there some talk of getting rid of the elevation and put it down at ground level? Was that...
No. It was going to be a real freeway. It was mm-hmm. going to be part of the loop freeway around Washington. You know, there's a section that it was built that was in front of the sort of the Watergate, not the Watergate, the Kennedy Center. And actually, I have a little story, but I was working for somebody else, but I was appointed as architect, the architect in charge of an extension of the inner loop. And and so they came down, the engineers came down and showed me what they had in fact done. And they had proposed a building, a freeway, which went right through the Belgian embassy. Then it went crashing through the Cosmos Club with one little ramp that flipped off the Phillips collection, and then it charged through the Indonesian embassy. And so I said to him, I said, why'd you do that? I mean, we'll have to declare war on two friendly countries. And they said, well, we've never been to Washington. We just have a map of all the low buildings where we went through all the old low buildings. And so I was fired.
I hadn't even seen what they're working on. Oh, my. Now, when you did Washington Harbor, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, wasn't that originally where they have the area in there where they got the ice skating rink? Wasn't there a harbor? Couldn't you pull a boat in there at one time?
Oh, the original plan was to have a small boat harbor. Unfortunately, the guy who was basically in charge of the partnership that was doing it said he didn't want the dirty waters of the Potomac lapping on against his beautiful buildings. And so it got to a point where either I held on to the harbor but was fired, or I could stay with the project. So I felt that the rest of the project was worth it because it was...
Beautiful, beautiful facility.
Because I wanted to celebrate. You know, nobody could get to the waterfront in those days.
Georgetown, Georgetown yards and everything. It was
an industrial slum.
Yes.
There was, as you know, the famous saying on the flour mill that the odor you smell did not come from this plant. Because
the rendering plant.
The rendering plant was there. The Hoffenmeyer rendering plant. And we tried to get various ways to get rid of it. Of course, the highway boys were the ones who had the money and the eminent domain, so they finally got it. But the whole place was a slum, and you couldn't get down to the waterfront because there was too much. And the actual waterfront was horrible because where they dumped all the concrete and the rest of it. So it was a truly tough waterfront. And I remember when we started in on this thing, there was a huge gravel plant, the Potomac sand and gravel.
How would there. Somebody
yeah,
down there, right?
Yeah, right. And we swung a bottle of champagne against it, and it wouldn't break.
No water game.
it was tough. But anyway, but the whole idea was to essentially open the whole thing up. That's why I wanted the streets that you see there, 31st Street, Thomas Jefferson, and 30th Street, they never existed because that's all made land.
Is that right?
The end of
we use them all the time now.
Yeah, well, but right, the end of The end of Center Georgetown was K Street, which is now was called Water Street at one point. And so those never existed. So we put in these three streets. And that was the first thing, because we wanted to be able to have people go right down to the water. And then we wanted to, open it up and make it a celebration of being on the waterfront. So people have gone down there, and Fisher calls it a psychotropic place, which is not a $20 word. But anyway, it's a place where people go, and they have, a lot of people have become engaged there, and there are in fact weddings and all sorts of things that happen there. And so I think it's something I was very concerned about, because I had written this book about waterfronts, because it engages the waterfront, engages the,
it's a part of everything.
It engages the magical point where the land meets the water. And essentially, I don't know whether it's an atavistic or a kind of original kind of feeling that we have, but people love to have dinner next to the water.
Absolutely, I can relate to that.
And so, and also, if you go down there, the actual wood boardwalk, that actually is cantilevered over the river. So you were actually walking in the river. I wanted you to experience the river in every way.
It's great.
And so I lowered the land to meet the river, and I brought everything down there. And then even down to some of the small details of how the drainage is kind of rippling, and a series of stepping stone fountains move you down to the river. Everything, the way that buildings go in and out and the rest of it.
It's spectacular.
It's everything to move you down to the river. I moved the tower. Tower is very important in any kind of a waterfront plaza. But I moved it off the side because I wanted you to see right down.
That view.
And see from M Street, you can see down to the water.
It's so magical. I think that tower is so important, and I recall it vividly when it first went on. Our relationship goes back to when they were working on the project. Particularly, Janice and I were very close to Tony and Joe. I was a partner in the deal Tony and Tony Sybil, who's still there, of course, running it.
Yes.
But we've seen what's happened to all the restaurants there, and the thing has just been spectacular. They've had their troubles now with that underwater parking. I mean, the underground. You know, they had the flood.
Wait a minute. We designed the lowest level to flood.
Yes, that's correct.
We designed it because otherwise the whole project would become a boat.
Right.
It would float away. So we designed it so that when the river's going to crest, because there's a gauge up at Harper's Ferry. And when it's about 10, it's going to be 10 feet over mean low water. 10 feet is a big surge of water. Then we take in the water, and it's under the benches, the concrete benches on the west side. And we pump it actually in fast, because we want to load that lowest level really fast, so it is real ballast and really hold the building down. So that's why one of the things that are in this book is the National Mall Underground, which is a flood control project, which we're going to flood. It's an underground basic garage.
That's where the creek was originally, correct? Underneath the mall? Wasn't there Tiber Creek?
Tiber Creek is where Constitution Avenue is.
I got you.
And the problem with it is that we have two kinds of flooding in Washington. One is river flooding, and the second is internal flooding.
Runoff.
And so where Tiber Creek was, basically the land forms slope down to what was once Tiber Creek and is now Constitution Avenue. The result is it floods. And it floods, and I make a slight joke, that it'll put put the government out of business quicker than the Republicans can.
Our town is flooded.
No, it has flooded. It has flooded, and just shut everybody down. And as a result, the archives built a special vault around them because they were afraid that the Constitution and float away. but the other buildings were all shorted out because us architects always put the switchgear, the electrical switchgear, first basement, and that was the first thing that got flooded.
the thing they were trying to keep a hole. But architects wouldn't. I think the builders did that. But Arthur, this is so important that we hear about these things, and we'll be right. But this is Our Town, and we're talking to Arthur Cotton Moore, and what he has done and what he suggested for Our Town has been unbelievable. It's our nation's capital, but thank you, Arthur, for making it Our Town. We'll be back and talk more about the waterfront.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
You're listening to Our Town.
This is Andy Ockershaus. This is Our Town in a dynamic conversation. I think it's dynamic because he's opened our eyes, Arthur Cotton Moore. We were talking about, my wife is extremely interested in the floodgates and how it worked and why they had to flood and flooded out our friend Tony and Joe's for a year and a half.
Right. Well, I can tell you exactly why. A brand new ownership came in, and they fired the long-term manager.
Project manager? Building manager.
Building manager. And he knew exactly who to contact up at Harper's Ferry. So he had these 30 or 34 hours notice. And and that would be plenty of notice to put up the gates.
For high water. High water.
That would be the surge of the river. The high water of the river. So they hired a young, very young fellow, and actually it rained that Saturday very much, and I was looking out my window. I can see the.
You were still living down there?
No, I was living at the Watergate.
You had the gas station for a while, right?
Yes. That was before, but now we're living at the Watergate.
Right.
And we have a view of Washington Harbor. And so it was raining, a tremendous amount of rain on Saturday, and the people, the crane company that comes and lifts up the gates, called up and said, "Don't you want us to come and lift up the gates?" And they said, "Oh, I guess so." And so they came and lifted up the gates. Sunday, the sun came out. Everything was nice and warm. And so this young guy said, "Hey, let's put a couple of gates down and we'll just wing it." Well, winging it was about $100 million worth of winging. Because the river doesn't know any difference.
No.
It just said, "I'm coming on in."
You can't stop it.
Coming on in, and boy, that fried everything. And so they were out of commission for, I don't know, a year and a half or something like that. But it was a deliberate cause.
It was human error.
Human error.
There's nothing wrong with the building, right? The building was fine.
Nothing wrong with the building, in fact. But they had taken down two or three of these very giant floodgates. And that's plenty of room for the river to come in. Plenty of room.
And it did.
So they did it. They did it to themselves. And I always said, you know, the floodgates are a great thing, but one thing you got to do is you got to pull them up. Otherwise.
A little late for that.
What a story.
A little late for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an amazing story. Like you said, $100 million, it cost a lot of people a lot. Yeah. A lot of people cost their lives because they had a lot of help from the restaurants. They couldn't pay them because they had no income. I know
well,
that.
Well, everybody had to move out. Everybody.
I know that.
People who lived there, as well as the offices and everything, everybody.
We all remember how bad it was, remember, for the business and for the community. But let's talk now about one of your things that you presented in a book that I read that I found interesting, but I had been hearing about it for years. It's some sort of water taxi service to three or four of the great points
right.
in and around our river. That you had offered it, has that 50 years ago as a project, a possibility?
Let me see. It was about 1986. How many years ago that?
That's 30.
Yeah. Yes, quite a bit. Yeah, well, around 1986. It began with me saying that the Kennedy Center is kind of an odd duck in a way because it cantilevers over the parkway three-quarters of the way, but it sort of floats there. It just doesn't have any kind of anchor to the ground. And I said what it should have is a grand set of stairs coming down with two elevators on either side of it, and that it should have a dock, and the result, people could come and sit on the stairs and watch the gondolas. But the main thing would be that if there was a similar dock for Roslyn, Roslyn has 20,000 parking spaces which are empty at night and on weekends, and exactly when the Kennedy Center is operational. So people could park and Roslyn, or they could take the metro down to Roslyn and catch the ferry, which would make a loop between Roslyn, Kennedy Center, and Washington Harbor. A nice, simple loop, a short loop, so there would not be a lot, but it would be a very pleasant way to go to the theater or get a dinner in Washington Harbor and then go to the theater. It's a very logical loop.
Very logical.
And the perception is that the river has two banks. It's got a right bank and a left bank, right? It just happens to be the left bank is Virginia. But we shouldn't really think of it that way. These jurisdictions are not.
But that's a major problem in our community, in our town, are the three jurisdictions.
Yes, I know.
Very big problem.
Very big problem.
You fight them all the time.
But the people in Roslyn, it's called Roslyn Renaissance, those people were very enthusiastic, and so were their representatives, and they have representatives for that dock and that side. And the guy who was then running planning for the Park Service was not keen on it. So I still think it can be done, and I still think the idea of the steps coming down, the dock there, so that you could go, people all in Virginia or could come, or you could actually just walk down the stairs and walk around a nice promenade around to Georgetown.
It's a wonderful idea, but you got the red tape Uncle Sam standing in the way there, the Park Service. So many people got to
I think that guy's retired. You see, one of the advantages is if you last long enough, everybody will either die or retire.
Isn't that funny? I've heard people in the parking business, they said, we don't have to worry about that guy. He's retired. Let's go ahead and build some parking garages. That's what I hear Doggett and Antonelli and all those people talk
sure.
over the years. But now I see they're running a taxi service from Alexandria over to MGM Grand and over there for
they're doing
that's
it
Neil
from,
Peterson's deal.
You take the taxi and it goes to Alexandria.
Right.
And then there's a separate taxi that takes you to what is called National Harbor, which is not one of the things I have against National Harbor is that it does have a casino and it has a Gaylord Hotel. Both are internally focused. Neither one of them have a relationship to the river. Why be on the river if you're going to have an internally focused thing? And so
MGM
casino can be anywhere.
True.
Who cares once you're working on it?
Well, the harbor tried to do it with putting up the Ferris wheel
and having people focus on
National
the
National Harbor, so yes.
I know Milt Peterson quite well. Yeah, I remember when he started that project.
I just wish there were more involvement with the river.
Use the water.
Use the water, yeah. Why are you there? To me, the land that is on the river, where I think that precious place, where magical place, where the land and the water meet, that's a very important place, and you've got to make it, take advantage of it. You've got to really use it.
Absolutely, and they don't.
They don't.
And like the Kennedy Center doesn't. That has no relationship to the water.
That's why
like
I wanted to make the steps
some way to
down
get to the water. Also, that would help with pedestrian traffic, too, if they had some steps to go down to the water.
Exactly right. And it would also be a land bridge for Foggy Bottom down to the river.
There was a time when the United States Marine Corps Band played at the steps right there beyond...
At the Lincoln Memorial. That was the Lincoln Memorial, and the steps were down, and they called it Watergate at that point.
Yes.
And they had a little band shell out there in the river.
Yes, I know.
And the planes.
Everybody, you would take your date.
Right, go to Watergate.
You get in your paddle, you paddle down there, and you would
have a little canoe.
Enjoy it.
But it was a way to have a wonderful, entertaining evening and a cheap date, because you could sit on the steps would go, or you could have a rent a boat or get on somebody else's boat.
Right.
But it was a magical evening with the sun. Of course, they didn't have the air traffic that they have now, but
exactly
the sun going down.
That's exactly what did them in.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it was when the jets came in. Yeah. The jets came in, you couldn't play any music at all.
You'd have to suspend the band. But these young people are missing that, because that was an important part of our town.
It was
the Watergate.
It was. Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, it had a wonderful restaurant. You remember the Watergate restaurant, of course.
I do indeed. It had the greatest popovers. They had the fantastic
Marjorie Hendricks owned the Watergate.
Yes.
They were one of our advertisers on Hardin and Weaver. That's how
rest,
I remember
the
that.
Rest of that was gasworks and
the
all
gas
those
work,
gasworks
right.
And there was one section that was it was so bad. I lived in that area in a little house on N Street, and there were some streets you would not drive down with your car because you wouldn't have wheels on it at the end of the block.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
Believe me, we knew our way around. But Arthur, the things that you have pointed out and pointed about our town, there's been so many great things, but you run into this jurisdictional dispute constantly with the area and also with Uncle Sam. So we're really dealing with four different entities when you try to do things.
Let me tell you, it's much worse than that.
Okay.
Much worse than that. On dealing, we have about two or three projects on the related to the mall, the National Mall. We counted up how many agencies, congressional committees, and what I call fiefdoms. And there are 37 of them. 37 of them.
With just the one National Mall.
One National Mall, 37, and I've been to all of them.
Oh,
and
Arthur,
I
mean,
tell
it's
you,
incredible.
It's incredible. But it's just, I mean, I have a diagram of this, and it is just, you cannot believe it. And not only that, after you've gone through, say, the six district agencies and the eight federal agencies, and you've been up to Capitol Hill to see the seven Senate oversight committees and the seven House oversight committees, then you have to deal with the fiefdoms. And let me tell you, they don't like each other.
No.
And so the Smithsonian fights with the Park Service, who fights with the architect of the Capitol, who fights with the National Gallery, who fights with a General Services Administration, and I could go on and on. I mean, 37 of them. So this is why...
Incredible.
And
but it's progress still. When Chip Ackridge would announce that thing, the Trust for the Mall, and I know Chip very well. I said, Chip, why would you get into something like this? You got no chance, baby. You're dealing with all the bureaucracy.
Well,
but he smiles and keeps trying to keep it alive.
No. In fairness, Chip is a wonderful guy, and his trust is a fine thing. But they have already set their mission on maintenance.
Right.
They are going to raise money for maintenance and only maintenance. What I'm
is that a good
do,
project? Doing only maintenance? I mean, they need the money.
They're not trying to do anything visionary or anything.
They're just trying to clean it up.
Just trying to maintain it. I mean, you go down and Constitution Gardens, the pond there is full of algae and is falling apart and all sorts of problems. There are problems everywhere.
It's a huge city.
Yes, a huge city. And then we're talking about, and even the Smithsonian's got hundreds of millions of dollars of deferred maintenance. You've got a lot of, so maintenance is very important, but we, I'm trying, and I'm with a group, a national coalition on the mall, and that we are trying to get together a group that is not unlike the Macmillan Commission of 1901 to take an oversight and a visionary view, because we have, as I show in the last part of the book, I'm showing an expansion of the mall.
Right.
Because there are, when we looked at it, there were 41 museums and memorials that wanted to be on the mall. And I said, you know, if they were all built, you know, it would look like Forest Lawn Cemetery. You know, I mean, it was just terrible. So we have to expand it. And there has to be an expansion of the mall, because that's exactly what Macmillan did. The Macmillan Commission, the mall went only from the Capitol to the Washington Monument. And so the Macmillan Commission extended it to where the Lincoln Memorial is.
Right.
It was all marsh and everything like that.
The reflecting pool, that's where they put the pool in,
right? Electric pool. Now we have the Vietnam and the
memorials,
the Korean, and now they were talking about the Gulf War.
The first
Gulf War, and they're calling. They're going to have a memorial to something that I call the GWAT. That is the Global War on Terror. The GWAT's got to have a memorial. that's just one of the many, many, many memorials that have to be down there.
I hadn't heard about the global war on terror. That'll never end. There'll always be a war.
There'll always be one. It'll have to be an expansive memorial.
They need a big piece of land for that. Well, Arthur, that's so interesting to talk about our mall and how happy it is, and I mean how important it is to us. But we're going to take a break here, only to get a breath for both of us. So we'll be right back here on Our Town. This is Andy Ockershausen with Arthur Cotton Moore.
Maybe your kids are about to graduate from college or even get their graduate degree. Or you're looking forward to retirement, finally. Don't go another day without getting your legal house in order. This is Attorney Mike Collins. Let me show you how to get a basic estate plan in place that will protect you and your loved ones in the years ahead with our trademarked Reservoir Trust. All I ask is 2 hours of your time. Check the mail for your special invitation and register now at MikeCollins.com. I'll even waive the tuition. That's MikeCollins.com.
Hi, Tony Sybil here to tell you about Tony and Joe's and Nick's Riverside Grill at Washington Harbor in Georgetown. Spectacular new restaurants. We've spent a lot of time rebuilding. You'll love it. It's really fantastic. For any information, you can go online to TonyandJoe's.com. It'll be a wonderful experience for the whole family. Call 202-944-4545 to make reservations. Everything is fabulous. You've got to come down and have some wonderful food.
You're listening to Our Town with Andy Ockershausen, brought to you by Best Bark Communications.
We're talking to Arthur Cotton Moore. This is Andy Ockershausen. We've been talking about the water and the rivers and the mall. One of the things I wanted to ask Arthur about is his feeling now that we've got two new places on the wharf. We've got something called the Navy Yard, the old Navy Yard, and we've got the wharf.
Yes.
And the wharf is only half done, as I understand. They still got the rest of the project. Do you appreciate, have they been able to use the water the proper way, do you think?
Much better than National Harbor. I think that I would say the wharf is much more engaged with the war. It is very linear. And I will say, by the way, that Washington Harbor costs $70 million, and they've got, they're spending a billion. So I think that I would love to add that budget. But anyway, they have
$2 billion the budget, isn't it?
It could be.
That's just the beginning, probably.
But anyway, and then half built. The only thing I would love to see them do is to have a sort of a center, some center of a center plaza or something like that. This is more
like you have at Washington Harbor. You got a plaza.
This is very important. It is that people concentrate too much on buildings and not on the space and the relationship of the buildings to each other and how they produce a public space. And it's called urban design, but anyway, that's a fancy name. But it's basically the relationship where people can gather and they have a sense that there is a center. I haven't seen it come about yet, so I hope it will.
Well, right now they're still in a state of flux, but they're still getting buildings open down there. Now, how about the old Navy Yard and what they call that, the Navy's place down there? The Navy Yard's still there, of course. I remember in the Navy Yard when they used to build big guns to ship to the fleet.
Absolutely.
I had relatives that worked there, so I knew what that was. Now it's all been redeveloped, and they seem to be using the water somewhat down there.
Well, somewhat. I understand there's a ship or two that's anchored firmly in the mud. But
now, that's good. You got to be anchored firmly in the mud.
Anyway, again, I'm a little bit concerned because, again, I think this is I believe in the sort of preciousness of waterfronts. And so I would not have put the stadiums down there.
Right, I understand.
And because they're, again, internal focus. And when I've been to the stadiums, they have not been what they used to say was had a commanding view of the Capitol or the rest of it. But anyway, it's great to have the stadiums, although I still think they ought to do something with RFK.
Yeah, that is a white elephant right now.
It's a white elephant. Every single team has moved out of there. So I have a book on comics that I'm going to bring out, and I have various visions of RFK.
Oh, my.
And a place where you might grow peas and corn and a field and that kind of thing. But anyway, I like the fact that Buzzard's Point down there, you know, Buzzard's Point.
I know it very well.
A building was built there, and I just cannot tell you how awful it is. It's a little like what the, I don't know if you know Annapolis, they built a hotel right there down in the waterfront. And a single building can really ruin a waterfront, and it can really ruin it.
That's happened?
And it has happened, but...
The architects are people building it, but that stadium, when it originally planned, we talked about it, had a view of the Capitol.
Yes, that was the idea.
The home plate was going to look at the Capitol. I hate to use an example, and I think Baltimore did a great job with their stadium.
They did, but they used the old railroad.
Right, they used the old yard.
I worked a lot with the railroad, and I even worked on that building a little bit. But that was before they got the idea of
that
making Camden Yards.
Well, I think they had strong leadership with William Donald Schaefer was the mayor of Baltimore when that project.
I worked for him. One day I presented a project to him on the old fish market there, and he made a face that I couldn't believe. He's so screwed up in the end like that. And I said, Jesus, I got to get out of here as fast as I can. And Bob Embry, who's his second in command, came over to me and said, he loved it.
Well, between he and Ed Williams and the people that wanted the Orioles to stay in Baltimore, they built a nice facility, and they used that brickwork and everything. Right. I agree with you. D.C. is just a... It's not even a ballpark. It's a baseball field.
Yeah, yeah.
The old ballpark is going. Old Griffith Stadium. You and I grew up going there.
I remember Griffith Stadium very well. Yes.
And the baseball, and it was a big part of our lives in our town.
Mm-hmm.
And Arthur, but what has happened, though, all over in our town, and your imprint has been significant. Even if you didn't design it or build it, you were around, and people always referred to you and always would talk to you about projects. I know that for a fact. Your name would always come up. And that's quite a burden on you. You're responsible for our town.
No, I can't take that.
I'm blaming you.
Remember my 37 agencies.
The 37 people that ruin our mall. They also have a lot of the national parks under their control, too. All those parties of Congress and so forth. Well, Arthur, what we see so much happening now with Metro.
Yes.
Has been who's running the series of Wouldn't It Be a Terrible Place Without Metro? One of the magazines or the newspapers saying, what would we do without Metro? That's terrible to even think about to me.
Oh, indeed.
We have gridlock. Without Metro, we're dead.
We would be dead. Absolutely. No, I was very strong advocate
you were a champion
for
Metro.
Metro, yes. And now I have a little thing in the book, of course. I don't know whether...
The book is in Amazon, right?
And the book I'm talking about, the homeless, because it's a big issue in Washington, and they have these cars that they're now throwing away, the 4000 series, because they don't have the right propulsion. So they're taking the cars, and so the cars are being thrown away, so that means they have zero value. But in fact, they have actually less than that, because they're paying a salvage company in Baltimore $1.3 million to chop them up. And so they have really negative $1.3 million. And I did a drawing, and it's in the book, on how they would make two very nice one-bedroom apartments.
Absolutely.
And they have good windows. They're very solid. And they would, and they could withstand very strong storms, not like the usual sort of
it's in the book.
Thing. It's in the book. And I hope someday maybe I can bring one down and put it right next to the district building and make them come out and look at it.
Get the mayor to come in and spend the night. That would be a hoot. Now, Arthur, but going on in other parts of the city, of course, you're just not focused on the water. You're not just focused on Georgetown.
No, no.
But I referred to you when you lived in Georgetown, right above the Esso station.
Correct.
And they had to sign up, remember the Valdez.
I do indeed. I remember that fellow who was always, he would always hang that thing out.
It's not there anymore. That was a great time, though, for Georgetown and the boom. Now, how about our, we have great difficulty, Janice and I do. We love the canal and the walk. They seem to let the canal be neglected. I don't know whether it's the Park Service or Uncle Sam or what, but I think that canal is a national treasure.
Oh, it is definitely a national treasure. And I remember when Justice Douglas actually walked. He took the press along there and convinced him.
Our Hardin and Weaver walked with him that day.
Right.
We got that. We did the whole broadcast.
Oh, is that right?
Justice Douglas.
Yes. Well,
he was a real maverick. I know that.
I was an officer at the Georgetown Planning Council, which is a little private group, and we were supporting that whole thing and the rest of it. And no, I think it's a wonderful thing, and I think they're crying just funds right now and money. I know that it was a sort of a joke. Some of us went out and poured a glass of water into the canal. But anyway, it was a lovely thing. And there used to be these. They weren't horses, donkeys, basically. They
were mules.
Okay. And we had our office in what was now Canal Square, and they. We had our ficus trees, so we put them outside because they were looking a little peaked. And I looked out, and and they were chewing the ficus trees. And if you run up behind one of those big burrows, they look really big.
They were dangerous, too.
I said, you know, have at it.
But that was such a treasure for Georgetown, though, to have that little canal boat and the keel boats, and they pull them up the river.
Right.
And we miss that. And I don't know why we can't work out some way to, I guess it's impossible to charge people to use the facilities on the canal. A lot of the national parks are charging admittance for automobiles and so forth. You can't do that.
I think
but there's got to be a way the public commits to that.
We went, I put a deck along the canal there. I don't know whether you ever had dinner there. It was the Sea Catch restaurant. It's not there now, yes. And
That was down below, wasn't it, the Sea Catch?
Yes, it was, but it had a deck out on my... In order to get that deck, I had to go to, I asked first one Smokey Bear Hat man after another all the way, and I finally wound up with the Secretary of the Interior, Stuart Udall. And I said, this is what we want to do, and I think it'd be really nice. And he said, what's wrong with it? And he looked at the next guy, and the next guy said, what's wrong with it to the next guy, and what's wrong with the next guy?
He couldn't find anything wrong.
And then we had it.
I remember the deck quite vividly, the whole thing back there. Did the Marriott ever own any part of the Sea Catch?
Yes, it did. It didn't own it. It didn't call it Sea Catch. It called it Port O' Georgetown.
That's it.
I spent a great deal of time trying to put the F on the O. But anyway, my other book, Powers of Preservation, it starts with us pulling up. Mr. Marriott had put down indoor-outdoor carpet on my beautiful brick plaza there in Canal Square, and we were pulling it up.
It had to go.
It had to go, and they had a jolly jumping sailor in front of it. The Sea Catch was really nice, but it was not a moneymaker.
A nice little restaurant, though, good food. You went down the steps. They say, you know, my problem is, Arthur, I've been around not nearly as long as your family has, but I've been around a long time, and I love our town, and all the things you talk about, they're all in there because we sampled them all, and that's what's so great about it. We just didn't hang out in one area. When I was growing up, we sampled the whole city, and that's true from Eastern High School out, you know, out. People would never go out there to, they don't know where Marlow Heights is. They don't even know where a lot of places are, and the same thing with Northwest. But there's so many great parts of our town, and you were so instrumental in even if you didn't develop it yourself, they know you were here looking at it. And that's important, Arthur. Yes, your presence and your clout.
That's very nice.
You had
nice
clout
you
at one time.
My clout at one time.
Yeah, I used to be able to get the mayor on the phone, not because of me, but because of how important WMAL and Channel 7 was, that the mayor would answer the phone. It goes back to Walter Washington, people like that. But we had, Janice and I had the pleasure and the privilege of working at this company, working for the Evening Star Broadcasting. And we watched the city because this was important to us as citizens and as broadcasters and newspaper people, that our town was so important. And this book and the things you've done has made it more important, our nation's capital.
Well, I thank you very much for that.
That's good. It's not anything I made up, Arthur. It's here. And now, how do we get the book through Amazon?
You can get it ordered right on Amazon. And the title of the most recent book is Our Nation's Capital.
Here it is.
Our Nation's Capital. And there's a subtitle
about
pro bono,
pro bono ideas. Ideas that I've suggested since over the years. And some of them have come about, and some of them are still percolating.
Some of them are still percolating, maybe for a long time, and some of them you run into the brick wall of jurisdictions, you run the brick wall of government and so forth, but you didn't give up, and it's still there, and I hope people will subscribe to that you have been such, I hate to use the word icon, because you're still young, the best-dressed man in town, I knew he was an architect when I met him 50 years ago, he doesn't remember, but the people that I grew up with were important in our town and still are, the Princeton guys.
Right.
And we just have treasure you and what you have done for us. And our town is still spectacular.
It is.
Got a lot of growth to come, but when you get down on that river tonight, when you get home and look across to the island, that's heaven.
It's heaven, yes. No, we have a beautiful city. And one of the things I would only stress about is that it's a planned city, by Pierre. Actually, he wanted to be known as Peter. Peter L'Enfant, because he wanted to be American.
Pierre.
he wanted to be American. And the Macmillan Commission. And together,
was that
1901?
You said the Macmillan Commission was at the turn of the century?
Yes, it's turn of the century, 1901. And 1901 to 1902.
The Macmillan Reservoir was named after him, correct?
That is absolutely true.
In Georgetown.
Yes, and he's a relative of mine.
Is that right?
Yes.
Are you related to the other Macmillan from South Carolina that was had the D.C. committee?
No, no.
You remember him,
no,
of course.
No, I remember him.
How about Tom Macmillan?
I worked on the Washingtonian when it was first coming out, and they did a story about the whole gang that hated Washington and really was really nasty.
They didn't want to spend any money here.
No. Well, they still don't.
Well, that's it. They still don't. Well, how about Tom Macmillan, the basketball player? He's a local guy. His family grew up here.
Yeah.
But, Arthur, thank you so much for being with us. I can't tell you how much we, and the we means everybody here, appreciate you and what you have done, and love the book. And I'd like to, before you leave, you to autograph it for me.
I certainly will.
Lizzie got it, but Lizzie's parents are very influential.
Uh-huh.
They have money.
So,
that's called influential. And as Jack Kent Cook used to say, are they people of consequence? And I said, Mr. Cook, who does that mean? He says, are they rich? That was of consequence to him. But Arthur Cotton Moore, it's been so much of a pleasure. Jenny, did we leave anything? My producer here ran WMAL and made it what it is. Me.
We're
celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary, and this has been a great 25 years of us being together to look at our town. We've lost so many good people, and I guess that happens every day, and but there's so many still good ones around, and you're one of the best. And thank you, Arthur Cotton Moore.
We love having you.
Thank you for being here. This is Our Town. This is Andy Ockershausen. We had a wonderful conversation with the world-famous Arthur Cotton Moore.
You've been listening to Our Town, Season 3, presented by GEICO, our hometown favorite, with your host, Andy Ockershausen. New Our Town episodes are released each Tuesday and Thursday. Drop us a line with your comments or suggestions. See us on Facebook or visit our website at ourtowndc.com. Our special thanks to Ken Hunter, our technical director, and WMAL Radio in Washington, D.C. for hosting our podcast. And thanks to GEICO. 15 minutes can save you 15% or more on car insurance.